Let me start with a little background. We started off as in the inspection side of the business, developing GD&T, right, for inspection purposes. And the way, the old way of doing things is that you'd get a CAD model with just the geometries, and then you'd get a 2D drawing with some GD&T, and a quality engineer, a manufacturing engineer, had to transcribe those information into our model, and then we would use that to evaluate parts as good or bad. Well, you can't build better products by doing it that way. It's inefficient, first of all, but it's also, you're not building better products. So what we're doing is moving that same GD&T engine up to the front where the designer is to allow him the opportunity to proof his work before he actually passes it down. And we found that a number of the engineers, when we did some studies on this, that only about 17% of the engineers graduating from a mechanical engineering program in the United States have any GD&T training. So companies have to get their people trained. They have to go to at least two courses. That usually is quite a bit of money. And what we found after interviewing a number of design engineers was that a lot of them were saying, well, we just go to the senior guy and figure out what he's doing, whether he's doing it right or not is a question. And the second part was, I looked at old drawings and assumed they were right. So what we did is we took that GD&T engine and we added more things around design, which is we bring a CAD model in with both the geometry and the semantics, and we are able to evaluate the GD&T and say, by the way, the things here, these are wrong. Here's why it's wrong. We explain it to them in detail. And then we have a link to the actual standard to say, and if you have questions about our explanation, we actually can tie you back to the standard so that you can understand the language in which we was in the standard that we based this conclusion on. And then there's warnings that are like, they're not really illegal or wrong. They're just not good practices. And then the rest is just, you know, best practices and so forth. So we have this model that does that and proofs it. Then it can be stored as either a project that we can use to do inspection, or it can be sent back to the CAD model, which is what a lot of people want to do, is send it back to the CAD model for update to get it cleaned up and then released out as a product. So that's what we're doing, which we think is new and innovative. And the other key point is this. Today, GD&T is interpreted by many people. The CAD companies have a GD&T module that does something that may not help them understand how to implement it correctly, but it has the standards in it as understood by whoever interpreted the standard. Their mathematics that they're using is only as good as that person's understanding of the mathematics. And then on the other end, on the inspection side, there's several large companies that sell big measuring machines that they also build a GD&T interpreter with its own set of rules and interpretations, with their own set of mathematics, and they're different. And now hopefully the differences are offsetting, but there's no guarantee to that. So what we do is we guarantee by using the same design engine and inspection engine that the uncertainties and the risks are eliminated, because we're, at least if we're biased, we'll be consistently biased, and therefore you'll have a better product.
Right, consistency is key.
Absolutely. And getting the information flowing downstream is the other big part of this, right? The model-based enterprise really is about efficiency, saving time and money. When by getting the information downstream and letting people being able to see it in its full extent, we're not wasting other people's time, other operators who are engineers that are expensive. And it also allows collaboration, which is really bringing the information back to the designers to improve the product. So that cycle is there, but it's done in kind of a more like, you did something wrong, instead of, hey, we found an error, we found something we need to modify. So I think it's part of what model-based enterprise really represents, which in the end, for most companies, it's the ability to save time, faster time to market,
right,
and reducing the waste in the process that currently exists. And when you extend this even to supplier base, it becomes even a more complicated problem, right? Because now we have different measuring systems, different rules, interpretations, and it just keeps on compounding as you leave the company itself and go into its supplier base. And it's not unusual for suppliers to have companies that have suppliers in the thousands, if not tens of thousands of suppliers, so the problem gets very complicated quickly.
Right, and what's interesting is that this enterprise-wide solution makes perfect sense, and there's more opportunities for error the bigger you are, but that also means it's more difficult to do, and maybe that's why until this point it wasn't done so often.
Right. Well, you know, the big thing with these kind of systems that are across the entire organization is that change is painful, right? We're comfortable in our space, and everybody has to change. It's not just, well, let the design engineers change. It's really everybody has to change the workflows and their practices and how they do things. And that becomes the big resistance in companies. The big companies who have advanced engineering teams and stuff, they're looking at this and they understand it. And their biggest challenge is this, how do we get our company to move forward with this, right? So that they see the benefits, they understand the benefits of time, money, efficiencies, but you know, they also understand that you have organizational adjustments to make. So,
what are some ways that people can ease those pain points of change, get people on board? And
well, some of the ways is the way we're approaching it is to offer pieces of our product instead of trying to force the whole solution. At least get them to start using the design tool, so that if they use the design tool, the number of errors that the inspector will see will be reduced. And so then there's an encouragement, well, maybe you should go use the same inspection tool, and slowly they because there's benefits and there's less hassles, they can incorporate that. So we think that's one way to do it. You know, other changes are again systematic changes where they're some of the companies are doing what I'll call an intermittent step, which is they're using what they call 3D PDFs, which is the geometry moving in on a PDF form. But it's still people readable, it's human readable, it's not machine readable. And that's really where we're trying to go, is we're using a standard file structure called QIF, or Quality Information Framework. It's an open source, free file structure, which is both human readable and machine readable. And ultimately, what everybody needs to, we're all trying to move to, is more automation, having machines talking to each other, having software on top of it that is intelligent, rule-based, that can make understand it and analyze and take action. And so I think there are certain key steps they have to do in trying to make change, but something like QIF is one of these foundational things. And it's not painful because it's really files on computers, not people changing workflows. So those are steps that could help move them to the model-based enterprise.
Right, and that leads me to my final question, which sort of wraps everything up, and IMTS is a huge part of this. You're seeing people opening themselves to change just by being here, and I wonder, where is this all going? Connected factory floors, are you guys sort of have an idea of where you want to be and working towards it, or are you kind of right, taking it step by step?
Well, I mean, I can't speak the whole industry. I think our vision is that, you know, what we're trying to do is give more automation capabilities of the experienced engineering, right? One of the things that was at a recent presentation at MTC in the UK, it's a metrology meeting, and one of the biggest concerns in the UK is there's a shrinkage of number of people going into the metrology world. You know, that expertise is both costly and it's a precious resource, and what we're really trying to do is apply expert opinion and expert knowledge to a whole broad set of manufacturers who may not be able to afford it normally, or may not be able to have enough of people to do it. So I think that the ideal is that we're building knowledge bases that allow manufacturers to output better products, and then ultimately having these rule-based systems again take over, control and modify the machine behavior in the normal range, so that we don't have to have people looking at what we would say typical process variations and having to do operations, that they're saved for the bigger problems that are being challenged to companies. Companies are launching products at a faster rate now. They need to do this with less errors. And I think that the future is that, you know, product launches and managing this stuff is only going to increase in velocity. And so there's no other choice but to try to do this to be competitive in the marketplace.